When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and that makes this Stuff You Should Know.
The podcast.
For now.
What kind of intro? I was kind of curious. And to those of you out there, I often sit with bated breath. Not often, always. And think, what's Josh got for me?
Wow. I wish you hadn't just built that up, because it's not really a particularly special.
It's okay. We've done 320 plus of these, and I'd say 300 or more of them have been very interesting.
That many, huh?
Sure.
Oh, well, then to heck with it. I'm just going to wrap on this one, okay?
All right.
Chuck, you remember when we went to Flip Burger?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
Richard Blaze.
Yes, Richard Blaze. He is an excellent chef.
Mm-hmm.
He has not only Flip Burger Boutique here in Atlanta, I think he's got a second one that just opened or is about to open.
Yeah, and Richard's a top chef guy.
He's a winner, right?
No, he actually...
He's had a winning personality?
Yeah, he will admit that he choked on his season because he's clearly the best chef and he just kind of choked at the end, which is not a very Blazian thing to do.
Yeah.
Because he's pretty money.
Well, we know a lot about choking. People send us emails about them choking.
Yeah, and he's now on, which I'm watching now, the Top Chef All-Stars.
Oh, yeah?
And,
is he choking?
As of now, he is. It'll probably be resolved by the time this comes out, but now he's one of the top three.
Okay.
He's in the final three.
Well, who else is on there?
It's a lot of the second place finishers from all the years.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, tough competition.
Sweet. Okay, well, I should also say to anybody out there, whoever is thinking of coming to Atlanta, a lot of Stuff You Should Know listeners email us, right?
Yeah.
And they say, where should I go eat? Every single time we recommend Flip.
Yeah, it's a fun place.
It's awesome. But the food is just amazing. I also strongly recommend the Osobuco Burger, right?
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Chuck, you've had the Krispy Kreme milkshake. I know you have. I've watched you drink it, right?
Yeah.
Hey, did you notice when it came out, it was steaming?
Yeah.
Although it was piping cold, it was steaming.
That's right.
And the reason it was steaming is because Richard Blaze, as is his way, had just injected a bunch of nitrous oxide into it.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that to basically fluff it, and I believe to also chill it very quickly, which are both very... they're Hallmarkian of molecular gastronomy, which, coincidentally, is what we're podcasting about today.
That's right, Josh. Molecular gastronomy, which is, let's go ahead and just give a quick history here. There was a guy named, there still is a guy. His name is Hervé Thiesse.
Yeah, he's very active still. He still has a blog and a website going.
In the 1980s, he was a physical chemist, and he was working on a souffle in his kitchen. And it was a cheese souffle, and the recipe had very strict instructions, said 2 yolks, egg yolks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we'll put in 4 egg yolks.
I'm a chemist. Who cares?
I'm a chemist. And it failed big time, as a souffle is apt to do. And he said, you know what? This is really interesting. I didn't follow those instructions, even though the right ingredients were were put in the recipe, and it flopped. So let me start studying this. And he started doing this with more dishes, the scientific study of food preparation, very systematic. And he said, I think I'm onto something here. I partnered with a guy named Nicholas Curti, who is an emeritus professor. Is that too, or is that a mistake? Emeritus professor emeritus? Is that a title?
I could see it being a title at Oxford.
Okay. So he was at Oxford, and he was another physical scientist, and they launched together molecular gastronomy. They originally called it molecular and physical gastronomy,
mm-hmm.
and that was a very new thing at the time. This is a very new discipline in cooking.
It was, and basically the there's kind of two bases of molecular gastronomy. It's number one, it's debunking myths. Like, there's so many old wives' tales surrounding cooking.
Right.
Which, like, for example, adding olive oil to boiling water that you're cooking pasta in.
I do that still.
To separate it.
It's just bunk.
It is bunk. The reason why it's bunk is because oil and water don't mix even when you're boiling it. The oil floats at top.
Yeah.
The noodles are down below that, and yeah. it's doing absolutely nothing.
I feel like a sucker.
What you should actually do is add a little bit of vinegar, like white wine vinegar, apple right. cider vinegar, just a little bit, because that actually does keep pasta from sticking to itself.
Right.
And one of the points of molecular gastronomy is getting to the actual truth of, does something work? Yes or no? If it doesn't, we should broadcast that it doesn't work so people, you know, don't feel like chumps, right?
That's right.
Or waste time and money and effort. And if it does work, why? And why is explained on a scientific level. That's molecular gastronomy.
That's right. He began looking at the physics and chemistry of the preparation of food, and he organized the first international workshop on molecular and physical gastronomy in 1992 and presented the first doctorate in that field at the University of Paris in 1996.
Yeah, which is pretty huge because he created a brand new field, and within a decade or yeah. so, they're handing out PhDs in it.
Yeah, well,
it's substantial.
Sure, it was substantial, but it didn't catch on like wildfire. It wasn't super popular at first.
No, and actually, it was very shunned.
Yeah, controversial, sort of.
Yeah.
Well, because chefs are all about cooking with the soul and cooking with love, and all of a sudden there was this guy, these two guys that were breaking it down to the molecular level and kind of taking all the fun out of it to some people's, in some people's opinion.
Right. And as you said, it's soulful. It's artistic, cooking is. When you apply science to art, it loses something intangible but very important, right?
Agreed.
But on the other hand, molecular gastronomy has been able to produce things like snail porridge.
Right.
You want to read the quote?
I don't have that. Do you?
I do. One eater of the snail porridge.
Uh-huh.
Wow, what just happened to me?
An eater?
of snail porridge described it as, quote, successively savory, sweet, snaily, crunchy, and tart, ellipse, nothing less than magical.
Wow.
That's pretty substantial for snail porridge, right?
Yeah.
And with snail porridge, or with molecular gastronomy, you can come up with dishes like snail porridge, which no one would ever have thought of creating. And you can also make it perfect, nothing less than magical, every single time.
Yeah, which is, that kind of precision is good when you're a chef, because one of the keys to a successful restaurant is consistency. But early on, it got a lot of criticism because a lot of chefs didn't find it was accessible to your average home chef. And they think...
it's definitely not.
Yeah, they think to be a successful discipline, then... Because Julia Child, for instance, she was a talented cook and chef, but she didn't really hit it big till she put out that book.
She was nothing.
That everyone wanted in their kitchen.
Right. And Chuck, while we're talking about books, we should probably give a shout out to Liz, who's a Stuff You Should Know listener.
That's right.
And who runs Lidabit Sweets, LIDDABITSWEETS.com.
Yeah, we plugged her before in her awesome treats.
Yeah. Yes. And I think it's been a little while since we got some chocolates, frankly.
Yeah, I think it's about time for a little, what's it called? Paella?
Yeah. She gave us Hervé Tisse's book, Molecular Gastronomy, Exploring the Science of Flavor, right?
That's right.
And I've had it since June of last year,
uh-huh.
almost a year, and have read the first entry. But we have the book, thanks to her.
Yeah.
And she gave us the book to kind of grease the wheels toward a molecular gastronomy podcast, so here it is.
That's right.
Almost a year late.
So to wrap up the history, in 1998, Hervé Tisse's partner in starting up this new discipline, Nicolas Curti, passed away. Hervé then changed it to just molecular gastronomy, dropped the physical part.
I think that's very honorable that he waited till the guy died and was like, I'm getting rid of this part.
Well, he didn't call it Tisian gastronomy.
No, he seems like a pretty cool dude.
Yeah. So he also loosened his viewpoint a little bit on pure science and said, you know what, there is a lot of art and soul involved. And so let's just say it's art and science and not one or the other.
And it's, quote, the art and science of selecting, preparing, serving, and most importantly to me, enjoying food.
That's right.
Because you can get to a point where you're no longer enjoying food. The definition of gastronomy was the art of selecting, preparing, serving, and enjoying food. And a lot of people worried when molecular was added to gastronomy that it was going to take out the last part.
Yeah.
It's not fun when you apply science to it, but he managed to combine the two. And since then, there's a whole just slew of really talented chefs out there working in this field.
That's right. And it's delicious food, too. I mean, it looks funny and looks interesting and different, but it's also yummy. It wouldn't be around at $50 a plate if it wasn't yummy.
Right.
Just because you can make a cube out of mayonnaise doesn't mean people are going to eat it. It's still got to taste like good, you know, mayonnaise.
Right. And if you're going to call something snail porridge because it's made out of snail, it better taste good.
Whose was that?
Nothing less than magic.
You know whose recipe that was?
I don't.
Was it Wiley Dufresne?
I don't know. I know you're a big fan of his, aren't you?
Yeah, and I haven't been to WD-50, but next time we're in New York, dude, we should go.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
He makes his, I sent you that link, the ice cream bagels.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And it look like little bagel halves, but they're bagel-flavored ice cream made into the shape of a bagel and then dusted
airbrush.
With like an airbrush.
Yeah.
To give it the shading of an appearance of being toasted. It's pretty
crazy.
Something.
All right, so let's talk
about... It was Heston Blumenthal.
Oh, okay. Was the...
snail porridge.
Nice. All right, let's talk chemistry for a second. If you're a chemist, you're going to classify matter into one of three things. It's going to be an element, a compound, or a mixture. Element can't be broken down any further because it's an element.
It's like oxygen or hydrogen.
Sure. Compound is, let's say, oxygen and hydrogen, mm-hmm. H2O. Or
water.
Maybe salt. It's a compound, and they are actually chemically combined, but they have properties that are separate and distinct.
From their components,
their
constituents, right?
Right. And then you have a mixture, which is when you combine substances that are not held together chemically, and they can be separated by physical means, like filtering something.
Right. And then that's pretty basic stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Chemistry 101.
Now we start to kind of get into molecular gastronomy's interest in chemistry. Like all of that is taken into account, of course, but we get to colloids.
Yes.
And once we reach colloids, which we just have, we really have entered the realm of molecular gastronomy and food. And a colloid is basically a mixture of two substances that are they're dispersed but not dissolved in one another. And they can actually be of two different phases or states. So you remember there's three phases of matter.
Yes.
Technically four, which is plasma, remember,
mm-hmm.
Which is liquid so hot it behaves like a gas.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I don't think they've entered that field with molecular gastronomy yet where they use plasma.
Blaze is probably like trying to search that out.
He's like, plasma, huh?
Yeah.
That's gas, liquid, and solid, right?
Uh-huh.
And you can introduce one into the other. And create something new. So, for example, if you introduce gas, you disperse it into a liquid, you're going to get what's called foam. For example, whipped cream or beer foam.
Yeah.
Right?
Or if you're Marcel from Top Chef, he'll put a foam on anything and everything.
I like a nice egg wash on some drinks. It's just like egg white.
Oh, yeah?
It becomes emulsified and turns foamy.
Yeah, you're into the cocktails.
Oh, yeah.
I'm into... pouring whiskey onto ice.
I like that, too.
Well, sure, yeah.
I've got to make Manhattan for you sometime, man. I have mastered it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I had a fancy cocktail the other night at some place, and it was fine, but it's just like, why are you putting all this stuff on top of the whiskey? In the end, it's not for me.
I will change your mind with my Manhattan.
Remember that cocktail that Yumi had at Momofuku that tasted like a sweat sock?
Yeah. It was, like the mustard whiskey...
Oh.
It was a mustard whiskey drink with a pretzel stir, and it sounded really intriguing and awesome on the menu, but it did. It tasted like not only like an old sweaty gym sock, but one that was taken off a foot that had some sort of infection.
Yeah, it was so gross. Yeah. And you guys are adventurous, but both of you are like, nah, I can't drink this.
I'm sorry, David Chang.
Yeah, but Momofuku is awesome. We don't want to downgrade that place.
Agreed.
All right. So
I don't think we can. We're not in any kind of position to downgrade Momofuku.
Exactly. Colloidal systems, Josh, like you said, involve two phases, gas and liquid, or solid and liquid. But when you're talking about food prep, a lot of times there's more than two phases, and that is called a complex dispersed system, that kind of colloidal system, because there's more than two. And this is where it gets a little, like, mind-numbing to me, because Teese said, you know what, let me create a little shorthand for CDS by describing these complex systems through abbreviations of phases, letters representing the size of the molecules and what ingredients you're working with.
Right.
And basically break down a recipe into what looks like a math equation.
Right. And, I mean, the fact that he created a shorthand for CDS kind of suggests how important it is to molecular gastronomy.
Yeah.
To basically create these kind of new and radical textures and shapes and things like that. But, yeah, it's a for example, I'm going to see if I can describe this, okay?
Yeah. Good luck.
But the CDS shorthand for aioli, right?
Which is basically mayonnaise.
Yeah, but it's with of. Garlic and lemon and
it's fancy
and,
mayonnaise.
Olive oil.
Yeah.
It's O times 10 to the negative 5th, 10 to the negative 4th, divided by W times D, which is greater than 6 times 7 to the negative 7th.
That's an actual sort of shorthanded recipe.
It is, and frankly, I can't make heads or tails of it. I know that the O and the W stands for oil and water, and the fact that there's a forward slash or a division sign means that the oil is dispersed into the water,
right,
rather than the water dispersed into the oil. And then the numbers like 10 to the negative 5th or 10 to the negative 4th, those are shorthand for the size of the particles,
right,
in that are meant to be introduced into this. So really, if you're Hervé Teese, or somebody Hervé Teese has explicitly sat down over the course of 5 years and explained this to,
right,
you could look at this and be like, oh, well, yeah, there's aioli right there, and I know exactly how to make this. I know how to make it every time. And the surprising thing, don't forget, Hervé Teese was not a chef. This whole thing started with a failure to make souffle.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a physical chemist, right?
Yeah.
What he came up with stands up across the board. There are literally hundreds of different sauces in the French pantheon of cooking.
Yes.
He managed to figure out that with his CDS shorthand, with his colloidal dispersion system shorthand,
mm-hmm,
right? He can basically categorize them in, I think, to 24 different groups. 23 different groups.
Yeah.
Hundreds boiled down into 23 different groups. And you can make new sauces by going backwards.
That's right. And that's one of the exciting things about it, is they're sort of reinventing classic recipes,
yeah,
many times. And we should mention, too, I kind of walked over this. One of the most familiar complex dispersed systems that you know of is ice cream.
Yeah.
Because ice cream is actually very complex. It's solid, which is milk fat and milk protein, liquid, which is water, and gas, air, because you whip air through it as you're chilling it, and in at least two colloidal states. So ice cream is a lot more complex than you might think.
Yes. And delicious.
Yes.
But, and we'll see later on, molecular gastronomists have figured out how to make that very complex delicacy,
mm-hmm,
in a very easy way.
Well, Blaze with his liquid nitrogen.
Yeah. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win, or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
So, Chuck, we have an idea now that you can apply what looks like math, which is really just shorthand, to cooking for molecular gastronomy. Other molecular gastronomists have come up with basically new ways of preparing or presenting food, right?
Yes, big time.
And there's some are bigger than others. Some are more buzzwords than others, like sous vide cooking.
Very popular these days.
Yes.
Sous vide is when you take, sometimes it's a meat, sometimes it's vegetables, and you put it in a bag with its spices that you want, and you vacuum seal it, get every single bit of air out, and then you cook that bag of, you know, it's something that won't melt, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You cook the bag with the food in it in a water bath that's a very steady temperature but never boiling. It's not like rice-a-roni that you boil in a bag.
Right, right.
A little more complex than that. It's generally a very low temperature. So, like, if you're going to cook meat, you put it in about 140 degrees and you cook it for
30 minutes?
Yeah, 30. Well, it depends on what it is. But, yeah, and what it does is, in the end, you retain the nutrients more, retain the juices, the flavor, and you get a perfectly even cooking experience.
Right.
So and you take it out and you flash fry it on both sides to sear it real nice. Well, not flash fry, sear it.
And you've just basically made a steak as per molecular gastronomy.
Yeah, I like your recipe better, though.
It's been working for you?
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice.
Although I do want to try the sous vide. It's just a little pricey to get into.
Yeah, because really you need a vacuum sealer.
And a water oven, technically. I mean, I guess you could do it on the stove, but the whole key to sous vide is having a really, really precise, consistent temperature.
Yeah.
And unless you're really good on your gas range, you're probably not going to be able to do that with just a pot and water.
That is correct. What about spherification? Technically, you can do this with just a normal pot of water, right?
Yeah, tell me about that.
So spherification is basically a way of presenting food and kind of turning mundane stuff into delicious little balls of food.
Yeah.
That kind of explode in your mouth, right?
Yeah, it's got liquid. It's like, remember that gum that you used to chew that had the liquid center?
Mm-hmm. Freshen up?
Yeah, freshen up.
Yeah. That stuff's still around. It's awesome.
Oh, is it?
The blue peppermint kind?
Oh, it's good.
Yes. So basically, spherification is taking it's a gelling reaction between calcium chloride and alginate. And alginate is this gum-like substance that's extracted from seaweed.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you take the calcium chloride to make, olive spheres, right? Take olive juice, calcium chloride, and I'm not giving any amounts.
Right.
Which is very important.
Oh, yeah.
Like specific amounts. But I'm just giving you a rough idea. You take olive juice and calcium chloride, you mix it together, right? You take alginate and you mix it with water, you allow it to sit overnight, let the air bubbles rise to the surface and escape, right? And then, the next day you make little tiny balls out of the calcium, chloride and, olive juice mixtures. And then very delicately drop it into the alginate blend of water.
Yeah.
And a chemical reaction happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, long-chain alginate polymers become linked because of the calcium chloride ions, right?
Mm-hmm.
A gel is formed. Because you introduce them as little balls, they turn into little gel balls of olive taste.
Yeah.
And you take them out. No, you drain them, put them in a cold water bath. And then after that, they're set, and you can pop them in your mouth.
Yeah, or serve them like caviar. I know one recipe that they had in here was for someone that takes apple juice and makes little caviar apple, basically.
Yeah.
That you would probably spoon that on top of some sort of other dish, and all of a sudden these flavors are bursting in your mouth as you bite into it, and it's just an experience.
It is. So I guess at this point, molecular gastronomy is food done ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can flash freeze. That's a big popular thing. They have something now called the anti-griddle. And I've seen Blaze use this too. It's basically cold cooking. He's into the cold cooking, but it's a griddle, and instead of getting hot, it goes down to negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
And so I've seen Blaze put mayonnaise on there and then take that little frozen mayonnaise and batter it and fry it. So in the end, you have a fried mayonnaise ball.
That sounds awesome.
And it stays at its ball form until you like squish the burger down. Then it.
That is awesome. All over. I did not know about that.
Pretty cool. I don't know if he does that at Flip, but I've seen him do that on a TV show once.
So yeah, with the anti-griddle and flash freezing, it's basically you're taking something and that's liquid and making the outside hard.
Yeah.
And leaving the interior, the core as like in a liquid state.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, you do that with like chocolate, you get something pretty awesome, right?
I would think so.
And I guess Chuck, those are some fairly common, or if you go to a molecular gastronomy restaurant around the world, you're going to run into something like that. Spherification, which was, I think, introduced by a guy named Ferran Adrià.
In Spain?
Yeah, who owns El Bulli in Roses, Spain. He created that, but I think it's become kind of standard. If you want to do it more at home, if you want to engage in molecular gastronomy, you could do spherification. You just have to have the right ingredients. But it's also just kind of using technology. It's like transhuman cooking as well. So like if you want to cook duck all orange, right?
Yeah.
duck all orange. I got it that time.
Classic dish.
You would basically roast a duck for 2 hours. If you're going to do it molecularly, you would prefer using a microwave.
Yeah,
it takes a lot less time, a lot less energy.
Yeah, I'm not into it.
I'm not either. Chuck.
Josh.
There are some tools. We said one of the great criticisms of molecular gastronomy is this isn't something that most people can do in their kitchen, which is, you know, that's part of cooking. That's what makes cooking soulful. You do it at home. There's a very special room in your house that you cook in.
And you teach your kids or your grandkids, and it's a family bonding. It's
exactly. But a lot of the stuff we've just talked about, you can't necessarily do in your kitchen, or can you? The answer, you can. You can go out and buy an anti-griddle, right?
Yeah, sure.
This is something you could have, like, stored in your kitchen?
I think they're about $1,200.
Okay, so if you were wealthy, you could go out and buy an anti-griddle.
Yeah, you can get a water oven for a few hundred and a good vacuum sealer for about $150.
Yep.
So all in on the sous vide, $500 or less, you can do that. It's not too bad.
Yeah, hypodermic syringe isn't very expensive. You can go down to your local free clinic and pose as a junkie, and they'll give you a bunch of them for free.
Yeah, I actually use those. They have, like, the cooking syringes.
Yeah.
To inject meats.
Yeah, inject meats with marinades.
Yeah.
Or if you want to make the little apple caviar,
mm-hmm.
This is good to have. It's also very good for extracting egg white from egg yolk.
Yeah.
There's a very famous picture that appears in this article of a cracked egg and a syringe dipping into it. That's like the visual icon for molecular gastronomy.
That was it.
Yeah. A vacuum machine is very important for sous vide cooking, right?
Yeah. Can't let any water in there. It's got to be sealed tight.
And then there's the gastrovac, which is kind of like an all-in-one utility for cooking molecularly. It's about $5,000.
Yeah, so it's, what is it, a crock pot, vacuum pump, and a heating plate all in one.
Yeah.
Not bad. And then you got liquid nitrogen, which is what Blaze loves to work with.
Right, and we were talking about making ice cream actually easier
mm-hmm.
and creating a colloidal system. You can, say, follow any recipe for ice cream, and you get the ice cream mixture already. But before you get to the step of actually processing it, you just pour in some liquid nitrogen and you stir it. And bada boom, bada bing, you have just created ice cream.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, another thing I've seen Blaze do is to get like on a very large serving plate. He'll have a very small, almost like an amuse-bouche, like literally one bite.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll have spices sprinkled on the plate. And he'll at the table, they will pour some liquid nitrogen onto the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts at like, it's like something out of the abyss. It stays together and it starts like dancing all over the plate
mm-hmm.
and collecting the spice. And so it's a clear, you know, looks like vodka or something.
Right.
But it's vodka sailing all over your plate until it's collected all the spice into its little sphere.
That is awesome.
It's very cool.
That is very... Where was that?
I saw a YouTube of it.
Nice.
Yeah, Blaze has done it.
Okay.
Very inventive guy. And he lives... I mean, we should have had him in here, actually.
He wouldn't have come in here.
We could probably get in touch with him.
All right. Well, Richard Blaze, if you're out there and you have a time machine, get in touch with us because we'd like to have you on
the show. I see him walking his dog and his kid all the time over by
Edgewood. Is he living in Decatur?
No, I saw him over near the Edgewood shopping center there.
Okay. Say hi from me next time.
Hey, Blaze.
Be like, hey, do that thing with that liquid nitrogen thing you do.
Yeah, exactly. That dang old goat fell over.
That's it? You got anything else, Chuck?
Well, we should say that if liquid nitrogen seems odd, it's really, Blaze likens it to deep frying, except it's cold frying.
I'm glad you brought that up. There is a lot of criticism to molecular gastronomy. There's also a lot of explanation to it, too, like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hervé Tisse once said, or he pointed out, that you can cook an egg by adding heat to it.
Yeah.
You can also achieve the same end by adding alcohol to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, what's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you can change the flavor, create like something new by adding alcohol rather than just cooking.
Right.
I think molecular gastronomists kind of think that people who have a problem with it are just kind of looking at it the wrong way. Like you're still achieving the same end. You're just using a different process or different means. Right.
I think it's cool. I wouldn't want to eat the, you know, it's expensive for one. If you go to one of these restaurants, you're going to drop some serious cash.
That's true.
But, you know, I'm kind of a classicist as well.
No, you're not.
I don't. No,
you're egalitarian.
I don't want no emulsifiers in my food.
Oh, so you're classist upward, not downward.
No, I mean, I don't mean a classicist. I mean a classic.
Gotcha.
I'm into the classics.
Well, you went right from, like, very expensive meals into class.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you were...
Sorry.
And what's sad is you said it correctly. I just assumed you
Did
meant
I?
Classist.
No.
Yeah.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
I'm all confused now.
Yeah, me too. So that's it for molecular gastronomy. If you want to learn more, including a list of some of the churches of molecular gastronomy around the world, you can type in molecular gastronomy in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. It will pull up a great article. And now, of course, we've just traipsed innocently into the forest of listener mail.
That's right, Josh, and this is a sad one. No jokes on this one. Because we have lost a listener, sadly. And her friend Amanda wrote us to tell us about it. Hi guys and Jerry, hope you're keeping well. I am unfortunately the bearer of bad news. One of Stuff You Should Know's biggest fans, Lynn Volos, passed away from a particularly virulent cancer a few days ago. And I think we got this letter last week, so mid-March.
Mm-hmm.
My friendship with Lynn epitomized all that is new in this century. I was a full-time student with no money, needed some entertainment in the evenings in early 2001, and I had just read a book that delighted me. The publisher set up a message board, so off I went and joined a rabble-rousing community of women from all over the world. Lynn was one of the first to welcome me, and in the ensuing decade would often give me the keys to the bus, so to speak, when she was away or indisposed to keep the peace. Because, you see, Lynn was a peacemaker. She must have seen in me a glimmer of her ability to relax frayed nerves, bring people together in crisis and joy, and be a center of calm and still water during many of the storms we have weathered individually and as a community. Lynn lived a life that I doubt many of us could imagine. She discovered her true self later in life and moved from the deep south to the northeast to be with her darling Nikki, facing hardships from the life to which she had given so much. Lynn gave more as a mother to Jessica and Becca, a beloved auntie, as a caregiver to seniors and special needs kids, and to her wonderful animals that gave her so much happiness. Just a short time ago, Lynn was diagnosed with cancer, and with the bravest of faces, she fought on until she could no longer. I never met Lynn in life, actually, but I cannot imagine the last 10 years of my life without her in it. Not only have I lost a friend, our community has lost a beloved presence, and Stuff You Should Know is minus one evangelist, who got a treat with her last almost hour-long show last week. Lynn loves Stuff You Should Know, I think, more for the rational, measured, and well-balanced way you all present information without judgment and controversy. So many traits that you all share with Lynn, and I will think of her whenever I hear, "Hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and with me as always is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. As always, your friend, Amanda." Very sad.
That is sad. Thank you, Amanda.
And I asked Amanda if there was any kind of charity that her family might want us to mention, and she said yes, and she wrote her family and said that if anyone was moved by this, that you can make a donation to the Animal Rescue Fund of Mississippi at www.arfms.com. So a great charity as well.
Well, thank you again, Amanda, for letting us know. And rest in peace, Lynn Svolos. Although we never knew you, we're glad you listened to us. Thank you for listening.
Part of the Stuff You Should Know family, for sure.
And we hope that you can still get us wherever you are, wherever you may be. If you want to let us know about something good, something sad, something neutral, we always want to hear it. You can send it in an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.